Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Support for the Takeaways podcast comes from Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily workouts are like a personal trainer for your brain, improving your performance with the science of neuroplasticity, but in a way that just feels like games. Start training today at Lumosity.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and thanks for listening to this special broadcast that we hope will remind you of the complexity and nuance in America's long relationship with guns. Greetings from Portland, Oregon, and the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting. We came west to try and get away from the conversation back east in Washington, D.C., the policy discussion that began with an emotional president after the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut last year.
If there's even one step we can take to save another child, or another parent, or another town from the grief that's visited Tucson and Aurora and Oak Creek and Newtown and communities from Columbine to Blacksburg before that, then surely we have an obligation to try.
That call to do something, a rallying cry of outrage. America won't accept inaction. A consensus is building, and then...
We're not going to accept gun control in the United States Senate.
We're not threatening to filibuster. We're going to filibuster.
And the president's into showmanship. He wants to show people that he cares, but in the end, he's not really going to do anything that would have made the outcome different.
What will happen regarding gun control on Capitol Hill will make some people angry, make others feel good, but will certainly have little direct impact on two numbers. Call them landmarks on the two very different paths that Americans travel when they think about guns. Path number one, the number of gun deaths that have happened since the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. Fatalities you didn't hear about, out of the headlines, but happening nonetheless. Take just the month of March. 805 gun deaths, according to Slate, that has a project tracking gun deaths from public crime and other stats. 805. And that number could be higher. 805 is the marker on path number one. Path two, different path, different number. 2,209,407. That is the number of federally mandated background checks run by the FBI for gun purchases in just the month of March. Actual purchases could be much more if you add in gun show or personal unmonitored transactions. So think about that. We were thinking about it as we left our comfortable public radio station bubble in New York City, our offices full of some, it's fair to say, I think, left-leaning gun control advocates who likely haven't spent much time pulling triggers, and we headed west on Route 78. And about an hour and a half outside of New York City, where you have to be a cop to buy any guns retail, you come to Easton, Pennsylvania, just across the New Jersey line, and American Sport Shooting, run by Mr. Rich Flynn, who we're going to meet. Rich Flynn?
How you doing?
John Hockenberry.
Nice to meet you, John.
Nice to meet you. Rich Flynn has a big store in Easton, Pennsylvania, but he wishes he had more stock. Everything has been selling like crazy since the Newtown tragedy. Flynn doesn't consider himself a gun salesman, per se. He says, instead, he's in the self-defense business. So you are the man behind American Sport Shooting right here in Easton?
Yes, I am.
How many folks are dependent on this shop, either customers, family, workers?
Well, my entire family is dependent on this shop, my wife and two children. Local area customers, I probably have a few hundred that come in and out now and then, you know, when they need different things. Guns, ammo, accessories, holsters, cleaning equipment, anything firearms related or knife related, self-protection related. I got involved with hunting when I first opened up, and it just didn't work out. It was very slow-moving, you know, 2 or 3 month-a-year business for me, and that's it. So I pretty much went mostly all self-defense, handguns, tactical rifles and shotguns, stuff like that.
Self-defense industry makes me think the end of the world is around the corner, Rich. You
well,
don't think
not
that?
Not really. Most of us carry, I carry a gun on me every day. There's a lot of carry licenses out here in Pennsylvania. People carry. You got to decide you want to choose not to be a victim. I'm not going to allow anybody just to get away with mugging me or trying to kill me. I mean, what's going on in the news these days? People aren't just robbing people, they're trying to kill one another. It's insane.
People in the gun business have a difficult time talking to the media. A lot of concern, a lot of nervousness about starting a conversation with the media. Why is that?
Well, most of us feel the media is basically 95% slanted towards anti-gunners. None of us, especially business owners, want any of the heat that comes along with that, especially a small business owner like myself. You get too many people picketing your building or causing all kinds of headaches for you, it could pretty much put you out of business.
Has that happened to you, picketing?
Hasn't happened to me yet, but it has happened to more gun dealers down in the Philly area.
What's the one thing you would want to add to the national conversation about guns if you had the floor and everybody was listening to you?
To not believe in gun control. So far, any laws that have been passed to curb any kind of violence haven't worked. The problem we have is with criminals, not with law-abiding citizens trying to buy guns.
So they say everybody remembers their first gun. Do you remember yours?
Sure. I bought my first gun when I moved to Pennsylvania. I come from New Jersey, and it was a very difficult process in New Jersey, and still is, to buy a handgun. And I think it's 1989 or so, somewhere around that time. Smith & Wesson 9mm, Model 59. And I still have it.
All right, Rich. Well, we really appreciate you showing us this stuff.
Okay, excellent. It was very nice meeting you, John.
Thank you
very much.
Rich Flynn there from Easton, Pennsylvania. Gun owners nervous about talking, aggressive about their rights, insulted to be lumped in with psychopaths. But there is in America an overriding interest in preventing gun deaths, preventing massacres, assaults. We're out here in Portland, Oregon, where our friends from Oregon Public Broadcasting trying to reconcile what has been irreconcilable in America. How can we get together on this? The U.S. Senate is going to try debating gun legislation for the first time since the 1990s. How can California pro-gun control Senator Dianne Feinstein, for instance, have a real conversation with someone like Pennsylvania gun owner Rich Flynn? Joining us now, author, journalist, gun owner Dan Baum. His book, Gun Guys, is all about the reality distortions in the U.S. debate over gun control. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So you helped us find Rich Flynn there. How do you think Rich Flynn gets together with Dianne Feinstein and has a useful conversation?
I think both sides have to accept some things that are difficult for them to accept. The gun control folks need to accept that there are 300 million guns already in circulation in this country. And banning more of them in the future really doesn't get us any safer. And in fact, it gets us less safe. And here's why. Because people like Rich Flynn and the gun owners of America, they're the custodians of the firearms. They kind of decide how we live safely among these guns. Now, we gun owners need to get a lot more serious about that. We need to get a lot more serious about locking up our guns, being careful about who we sell our guns to. We need to raise our game considerably. And the gun disliking community needs to bring us in as allies in the gun safety cause. And you don't do that by threatening to ban guns, by belittling gun owners, by insulting them, by saying, we trust you with this gun, but not with that gun. Both sides need to raise their game, frankly. And both sides need to show each other a lot more respect and treat each other as allies in the cause of making us safer among all these guns.
Dan Baum's book is called Gun Guys. And, you know, it's not just gun guys either. Dan, listen to this. Where does this sentiment fit into the national conversation?
And there's no better feeling in the world than when you're walking down the hallway, you see the shadow of somebody in your house, and you cock that Glock, and they go right back out the window.
This notion of self-defense, that's a comment from Michelle Finn, a gun owner from Independence, Oregon. Our colleagues at Oregon Public Broadcasting, helping us to co-produce this special, spoke with so many gun owners who embrace a spirit of the West, independence, suspicion of government. We'll hear their voices all hour long. This idea of self-defense, this is in the national conversation that the U.S. Senate's going to be debating, Dan.
Yeah, you know, for people who feel the need to defend themselves with a gun, it is as offensive for somebody like Chuck Schumer to be making their self-defense choices as it is for women to hear Mitch McConnell presume to make their reproductive choices. Gun guys see self-defense as a biological function. Every organism down to single cell defends itself. And it's really up to the individual, gun guys say, how he or she defends herself. It also needs to be said that the people who support gun control tend to live in very nice neighborhoods. And the people who don't, or who live way out in the country far from law enforcement, say, what do you know about my self-defense needs? How can somebody who lives on the Upper West Side of Manhattan make a self-defense decision for a woman who works the late shift in the South Bronx and has to walk 8 blocks to the subway at 11 o'clock at night? It's inappropriate, they would say, for one person who lives in some one set of circumstances to make self-defense decisions for people who live in others.
Well, let's bring in Rick Ector from Detroit, Michigan. Rick, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Rick, say it loud. Are you a gun owner and proud?
Most definitely. I'm unabashedly pro-gun, for sure.
And how do you reconcile the national debate on gun control? And from the perspective of an African-American, where gun violence has had such a huge impact on communities where you live, what would you add to this debate?
Well, since you brought that up, let's talk about our major urban areas all across the country. If you look at them, areas in which black people and other people of color tend to be concentrated, gun control is the most stringent. And when you have strict gun control in some places such as New York or Chicago, and only until fairly recently in Detroit, you have a huge population who is largely unable to defend themselves, and especially during these ages of public resource austerity where no money is devoted to resources, you have a whole bunch of people who are unable to defend themselves, and it's not fair, it's not right, it's not just. You know, we look at the whole gun issue, and we're like, well, what about us? There is no right to not be a victim of crime, you know. How can we defend ourselves? And we hear people, like you said, in the upper Manhattan communities, you know, well-to-do, and we're here in Detroit. We got crime like you wouldn't believe, 400 homicides. We have one rape per day within the city of Detroit limits. Aggravated assaults, carjackings, home invasions. We're like, well, what exactly do you expect us to do? Why are you trying to take our firearms? Why are you continuing to put up barriers that allow individuals in places such as Chicago not to be able to protect themselves? And it's really offensive. And I really think that we need to take a long, hard look at what we're going to do to reduce people opportunities to commit these heinous offenses. Let's get serious with crime.
Right. We're talking with Rick Ector, who's a concealed carry instructor in the city of Detroit, also Dan Baum, author of Gun Guys. You two know each other, right?
Absolutely. I had the good fortune of meeting Dan a couple of years ago when he was telling me about his project, and I was glad that he invited me to be a part of it.
Well, we're hearing a lot of voices this hour. This is what we do here at The Takeaway. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Be a part of the conversation on this special broadcast. Coming up, if there's gun pride, is there also something called gun shame in America? Coming up, a man who has tens of thousands of rounds of ammo, dozens of guns, and keeps it a secret, but not because he has plans to start any kind of an insurrection and take over the USA. Stay with us. Will Williamson joins us now from Durham, North Carolina. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John.
You know, Dan Baum has already expressed to us a sense of, you know, he's not often completely comfortable describing something that has been with him, his relationship with guns, for his entire life. You really tangibly live that experience, right?
I do. And I think it's been exacerbated recently by sort of the gun debate. Gun control debate has been taken over by the two extremes, and it's sort of marginalized those of us in the middle who are sports shooters and use firearms recreationally. And it's placed us in an awkward position. Certainly for me, in my work environment, there tend to be not very many shooters, and it's become I'm very circumspect about talking about what I do on the weekends, and my main hobby is engaging in shooting sports.
So in public conversation, polite public conversation, for you to say, oh, why, sure, I know what an AR-15 is, that's not going to come out of your mouth.
It is not. And actually, I own an AR-15 and use it in a shooting sport. But if I were to say that to someone, they instantly project their own fears and concerns on it, and it escalates to, oh, no, you own an assault rifle? Well, I own a rifle that is capable of accepting high-capacity magazines and firing at a high rate of fire, but we use it in a sport. And the conversation stops there.
You know, Will, I can hear in your voice how you're tiptoeing, even now, talking to us. Are you in a gun closet?
I am, to an extent. It's very true. You have to be careful how you engage in the conversation about firearms. There are consequences to what, of course, what you say and what you do at work in your work environment, which is, for me, is very different from the folks that I shoot with on the weekends. Views about firearms and gun control and personal safety and personal liberty and just a host of different concerns.
So you don't have a don't tread on me flag in your gun room and have a plan to call your neighbors when it's time to be in the revolution, whatever it is I might think mythologically about you and your pals?
Right. We actually are sports shooters. And if I were to say to my colleagues that I own several dozen guns, which I do, some folks will immediately say, oh, my goodness, you own an arsenal. That's why would you need so many guns? Well, really, to sports shooters, it's analogous to tennis players. One of my brother-in-laws must have easily three dozen tennis rackets.
Or it's like Jay Leno with all his cars and motorcycles.
Right, or somebody whose interest is cars. They might own a lot, or an audiophile may have a large amount of equipment that they use in pursuing their hobby. Well, it's the same for us. We're not using them. I don't bury ammunition in my yard, but I also probably shoot around 10,000 to 12,000 rounds a year, and I might buy, we reload our own ammunition for economic reasons and to gain a competitive advantage because you can tailor your ammunition to the game that you're playing. But if you were to say to someone, well, I buy 10,000 bullets at a time, they would think, again, you can get some very different and very strained reactions from folks who don't understand that that's just a consequence of playing in a sport where you shoot a lot of rounds.
All right, well, let's get your advice then on how to do something that's going to substantively change the situation in America, make it harder for something like Newtown to happen again, and doesn't threaten your hobby. And I think everyone listening to this program would describe the fact that you have many dozens of guns and tens of thousands of rounds of ammunition as an arsenal. I don't think they would be incorrect, but how would you add to the debate to do something constructive here, other than just be nervous?
Well, certainly I think it's not really a legal problem. It's a public health problem. And I worked for years in a school of public health, and we just see the problem is a decline in mental health services, and that's going to be a very difficult thing to do. And people, particularly legislators, are going to have to accept that and have the courage to move toward this. Short-term solutions aren't going to address the underlying problems that lead to gun violence in society, and certainly not just mental health, but substance abuse, racism, poverty, and all these things interact in complex ways.
Gotcha. All right, so what's this like in the past, this idea that you have something that's a huge part of your life that is really as American as apple pie, but yet you're really nervous to let anybody know what's going on in your life, and you have to really be secretive. I mean, what else is that like in the United States over the last couple decades?
Well, I don't mean to marginalize in any way the experience of gay folks, but my friends and I who shoot, we sometimes look at each other and say we can be empathetic toward gay folks who were afraid to say they were gay and would stay in the closet because they were afraid of the consequences at work and in their social circles. So we were saying sports shooters have become somewhat analogous to being gay, although it's much less of an effect on our lives than on gay folks' lives.
Will, that is such an interesting perspective. I'd love to get Wayne LaPierre in here and ask him about that, but he's not available. Will, thanks so much for being with us.
Will, thank you for giving me a chance to speak about my experiences as a sports shooter.
Will Williamson from Durham, North Carolina, with a story I'm pretty sure you haven't heard so far in the gun control debate. What about that? Guns, completely legal, as American as apple pie, but more of a humble pie for gun owners afraid to tell people about their interest and their hobby. Is the NRA responsible for casting gun owners as extremists? Is it the media? Coming up, Dan Baum reacts to this idea of gun shame and your voices at 877-8-MY-TAKE, our special broadcast on America's response to gun violence from Portland, Oregon, with OPB continues. This is The Takeaway. Dan Baum, we're back with him, author of Gun Guys, on this special broadcast from Portland, Oregon, on the gun debate in America. Hey, Dan, that's a new one. Maybe you should work on a sequel to Gun Guys. Sports shooting is the new gay. React to that.
Well, you know, as I say in the book, I've often felt like a closeted gay man. Remember, I'm a liberal Democrat, and I live among liberal Democrats. And liberal Democrats can say the most god-awful things about gun guys. They will talk about gun guys in ways they would never talk about gays or Hispanics or blacks or women. And they consider it not only fair, but even righteous often to say terrible things about gun owners. And I would often just kind of, you know, chuckle along like Tom Hanks in the first reel of Philadelphia, just kind of pretending I'm not offended, but I often was offended.
Well, we're not trying to generate a lot of sympathy here, particularly for gun owners, but really to get at the question of what is a constructive debate, what is a constructive conversation about gun violence in America and what to do as the Senate begins a historic debate. Listen to this fellow here, one of the voices that we've put together here, Chuck Defoe from Ken's Sporting Goods in Crescent, Oregon.
I've stopped a gun sale a couple of times just from gut feelings. If somebody's kind of off the rocker, I will not be part of selling them a firearm. They can go someplace else and buy it if they need to. I'm not doing it.
Do you buy that, Dan Baum, that the salesmen, the people at the gun counters in America are good backstops? They are serious about background checks. A lot of people tell stories like that, but I'm wondering.
You know, I once saw a gun purchase take place. I wasn't sure I would have sold the gun to the guy who came in. He was kind of odd, but I had no real reason to believe he was a potential criminal. It just gave me an odd feeling, and it was an interesting transaction to watch. I think gun store owners do sometimes. I've had gun store owners tell me the same thing. And again, you know, if we were all calming ourselves to a higher level of respect and a higher level of thinking about this, perhaps gun store owners would be more inclined to do that, to take responsibility. But, you know, gun store owners, like your first guest, are feeling rather beleaguered and dissed, and they may not be having their social conscience elevated by this debate, but they may be just made to be angry.
Dan, let's hear from Joe Cantrell here, who's a gun collector.
The only solution to a lot of bad guys having guns is good guys having guns. Well, what are we going to have, a shootout in the street? That's crazy.
There's someone commenting on the state of debate and how unconstructive it is. What would you say about that?
That's the NRA line. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. I don't think that's true, and I think it's a tone-deaf thing to say at this point. It's a much more complex subject than that, the whole issue of concealed carry. We probably don't have time to go into it, but it's complex and it's emotional.
And the stats, the crime stats on this are sort of all over the map. You describe that in your book. Here's a story from Tom Diaz, a gun enthusiast who was a researcher on Capitol Hill, author of The Last Gun, who says crime stats can be taken a couple of ways. Listen.
People throw around primarily crime statistics. and try to relate them to the presence or absence of guns. And that's a false measure because crime goes up and down and sideways. The real measure is, as I lay out in my book, the number of people actually being shot has been rising steadily.
What do you say about Tom Diaz, Dan Baum, and then we're going to go?
Tom Diaz calls himself a gun enthusiast. He works for the Violence Policy Center. He's a big advocate for gun control. He's paid to be. Frankly, he seems like a good guy, but I'm not sure I trust him either on this.
The debate continues. Dan Baum, author of Good Guys. Stay with us on The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaways podcast comes from Lumosity. Any brain can get better, and Lumosity.com can help. You can give your brain the workout it needs with a training program designed by the neuroscientists at Lumosity.com and used by researchers at Harvard, Berkeley, and Columbia universities. Start training today at Lumosity.com and discover what your brain can do.
We've talked with gun owners. We've talked with sport shooters. We've heard the voices of some gun control critics and some gun control advocates. Michael Kundu, you're a gun owner in Washington State. Welcome.
Hi.
I would describe you as someone who really thinks seriously on the self-defense piece of all this. Is that fair?
I think that's probably an accurate statement, yes.
So as a self-defense guy, what is it about guns that make you feel better, and what is it about guns that make you nervous?
Well, I would probably have to start with the second premise about being nervous about guns being around. Now, the only reason that I own a firearm or a couple of firearms is simply because I am concerned about the variety and the number of guns out in society. I would call myself a reluctant gun owner. I'm certainly proficient. I've been shooting competitively since I was young. But over the last few decades, I've had a chance to think about this. And the reality is that where there are more guns, there is unquestionably more violence, more death, and so forth. And the reality is the only reason that I have guns is because I'm concerned about my neighborhood. I know that I live in a rural area. I know that a lot of folks around me have firearms. And I simply want to be equally prepared in the event something does happen in my household.
Now, anticipating that there are some public radio listeners out there who would view you as a violent fellow and who's probably part of the problem, not part of the solution, here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing you say, I've given up on Washington. I've given up on government doing anything responsible here. I'm taking matters into my own hands. I'm going to feel good, and the way I'm going to do that is to carry a weapon. Is that fair?
No, that's not at all fair. I haven't given up on the government. What the reality is, I've given up on that segment of our society that have become so many vocal proponents of gun ownership. Some of the folks that I've heard before that claim that the only way to stop the bad guys with guns is to put more guns in the hands of good guys. Those are the people I've given up on. The reality is that this issue is so polarized that, frankly, I don't think we'll ever come to consensus in any fashion about it. The people who own guns, and in a sense, I'm putting myself in the same category, I'll admit with that, are folks that really have a need for the self above the need for society or a focus on society. The truth is that I know that folks are not going to give up their guns, and I'm pretty sure that there aren't going to be any strong political decisions or restrictions made to reduce the amount of gun deaths that we have in this country. And the reality is I'm taking a selfish position. I simply want to make sure that my family is protected if I'm able to protect them. And with the risk of monopolizing the conversation here, I do want to make one quick comment about this notion that, it's only the felons that have guns. Every single gun out there started as a legal gun. The reality is that the guns, the number of guns out there, the availability of them, and the lack of restrictions on where people can get guns, that's as much the problem as it is that people are using them in negative fashions. I simply am taking a selfish measure, and that is protecting my own family. But I strongly believe that the people I've given up on are the folks out there that really claim that you need a gun in order to live safely. Hmm. I think that's a ridiculous argument.
So Michael Kundu, who we're thrilled to talk with, a gun owner in Washington State, while the gun control lobby talks about taking guns out of circulation, that sort of thing, you believe the NRA has to do more giving in terms of compromise.
Well, I think they need to be sensible. They're definitely not sensible. What the hell is the point of a 30-round magazine? They're really, in a civilian world, even hunters don't use 30-round magazines. There's only one reason for a 30-round clip, and that's for the use for the military or for somebody who wants to effect as much damage as possible in the shortest amount of time. That, in my mind, is a very simple place that even the NRA, if there was any sanity in that organization at all, would look at and simply say that, you know, that makes sense. I think the reason that they continue to say that that's a ridiculous approach is because they feel as if they've got to push for more in order to get at least something. It's sort of like, you know, if you're bidding against somebody else, you obviously want to stay higher, so that person, assuming that that other person's going to go lower. The reality is that there's no sense in the discussion and in the dialogue at this point. There are measures that can be taken to reduce some of the deaths out there, but they just are not being looked at logically by groups like the NRA.
All right. Well, I'm biting my lip here because I'd love to know what you think about the debate that we're anticipating in the U.S. Senate. But we'll hold you. We'll talk to you a little later this hour about that. Michael Kundu, a gun owner in Washington State, thinks the NRA needs to do more compromising here. Stay with us. This is John Hockenberry. You're listening to the Takeaway special broadcast on the gun debate in the United States regarding gun control, regarding gun violence. The Senate is about to take it up. Joining us now from the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting, where we are today and tomorrow here at the Takeaway, Dr. Karen Gunson is medical examiner for the state of Oregon. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And we want to thank Oregon Public Broadcasting for introducing us to you and really for alerting us to your story. How has guns had an impact on your work as a medical examiner in your long career here in the state of Oregon?
Well, I started as a medical examiner in 1985, and during those first years, we had homicides, obviously, and most of them, there was a mix. There were gun deaths, there were bludgeonings, there were stranglings, there were stabbings, and over the years, we have seen an increase in the number of firearms death in our homicide population. And so right this year, in fact, we looked and we had 16 homicides so far. 10 of them were gun-related homicides. So we have seen an increase in the number of homicide from gun deaths or from firearms. And we see every day practically somebody who dies as a result of a gunshot wound to the head because they committed suicide.
Now, in your work, as you see this, and you're describing, and I'm sure what you've seen is much worse than what you're describing, is there a narrative where you say, because of what I'm seeing, it's so obvious we need to do blank, or is it never obvious what we need to do?
Well, to me, it's not obvious. I always consider myself to be sort of the canary in the mine, where I am here to tell people this is how people die. You can use that information, put it with the other information you're gathering from around your own environment or from the media or wherever, and make a decision about whether this is something that is acceptable to you or what are you going to do about it. And I mean you as policy members or you as members of the community. And so we look at this and decide we have had 421 firearm deaths in the year 2011 here in Oregon. The vast majority of those are suicides. 342 of them were suicides. 65 were homicides. And I think about when I listen to the other people who've talked this morning about how they have firearms to protect their homes and their families, and I can think of only one or two times this past couple of years where somebody has actually shot and killed a burglar in their home. Most of the times when somebody dies in a home, it's because they've used the firearm for suicide.
We're talking with Karen Gunson, medical examiner for the state of Oregon, right here in our studios in Portland, Oregon. I'm going to have you listen to the voice of someone who's essentially a colleague of yours, a public health professional. His name is Dr. Dariush Mosafarian. And in an interview with one of our producers, talks really about the difficulty of framing this whole gun debate as a public health issue. Listen.
Well, this is the great thing about the Second Amendment. It says that, you know, people can own the gun, but it doesn't say that we can't make the price of the gun more representative of its societal cost. There's no regulation on what a gun should cost, and so we should put a tax on guns, not as a penalty, but we should put a tax on guns to better represent their true cost, and their true cost to police officers, their true cost to tracking, their True Crosser registration. And so with that tax, then we can use funds to do teaching for children, teaching for regular gun owners about gun safety and reducing gun violence.
Dariush Mazafarian, Dr. Dariush Mazafarian, speaking about public health issues regarding guns. We're also speaking with Dan Baum, author of Gun Guys. You want to react to that? And then I'll go to Dr. Gunson here in the studio.
It's an interesting idea, but you got to remember, then you're going to be disarming the poor. And as Rick Ector pointed out earlier, the poor are often the people who most need guns for self-defense. So it could be an iatrogenic step to take.
So an economic solution there isn't necessarily going to help change what you're seeing, Dr. Gunson.
Probably not. I think what's going to change what I'm seeing is, as was said by one of the other people who was speaking, some intervention as far as mental health, and maybe that's a public health kind of issue, because what I'm seeing is that the gun violence is mostly centered around those people who are depressed, those people who are not getting the mental health care that they need, and they have ready to hand a lethal weapon.
Let's put that to Dan Baum. So it's easier to get a gun than counseling. That's a public health issue. What would you do about that, Dan?
I'm not a public health guy. I'm really not a policy guy at all. Obviously, we have holes in the in our mental health safety net that need to be plugged, but I wouldn't claim expertise in that.
But is there some element there that needs to be in the policy debate on some level? The availability of guns compared with the availability of counseling, is that just apples and oranges in your view, Dan?
It's kind of apples and oranges. And remember, the availability of guns is in a certain way irrelevant because we already have 300 million in circulation. That's the real problem. How do we live more safely in a country that has so many guns already in private hands? And nobody's really talking about that.
Dr. Gunson, what would you say?
Well, I think he's actually sort of agreeing with me in a way. We have the guns out there. They're lethal weapons. They're available to the person in the household. That person has the gun because they're using it for protection, but it more often turns to one of their family members to die from that weapon. And so there has to be, I think, some discussion around that issue amongst family members, amongst how guns are kept in the home, whether they're locked, whether people can find the lock, the key to the lock, that kind of thing.
Karen Gunson is a state medical examiner in the state of Oregon here in our studios at Oregon Public Broadcasting. Dan Baum is the author of Gun Guys. We're going to stay with both of these folks and continue our discussion on this special broadcast of Guns in America. Can we talk about guns in America? Dan and Karen, are you happy about this debate in the Senate very quickly before we go?
I don't think it's a very fruitful debate, frankly. I think both sides are behaving pretty foolishly. But I want to congratulate the doctor who was just on. Absolutely. People need to be talking about how guns are stored in the home, who gets to say how the guns are stored in the home. She's spot on with that.
Karen?
I think that they're so polarized right now, both in the Senate and in this country, about guns that people aren't really thinking clearly about how we're going to make them safe.
And
they're
there. You're a gun owner, right?
I was a gun owner. I grew up shooting trap with my father in Central Oregon.
Karen Gunson, Dan Baum, people with strong views about guns and gun violence in the United States, and also with surprising details in their background. You know how to reach us, 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway. Stay with us. Can we talk about guns? That's what we've been talking about all hour long, and we're going to leave you with the notion of what's going on in the U.S. Senate. There will be a debate about guns and gun control legislation. There may even be a vote. Dan Baum said, he's a little worried about this debate, but maybe it's not this debate we should be thinking about. It's the next one, the next debate about gun control or gun legislation or what we're going to do about this issue that's so important for our time. We're going to leave this hour with all four of our guests who've been with us. Dan Baum, author of Gun Guys. Also with us, Michael Kundu from Washington State, a gun owner. Rick Ector, a carry and conceal permit instructor in Detroit, Michigan. And Dr. Karen Gunson, medical examiner here in the state of Oregon. Everybody with us, Rick, Karen, Michael, Dan.
Yes. We're here.
We're here.
All right. I'm putting you right on the U.S. Senate here, on the Senate floor. And if you could identify yourselves as you speak, I'll give you the floor, Rick, first. How do you want to start the next debate on gun control and gun violence in the United States? Rick?
Well, the only way – well, Rick Ector, from the city of Detroit, concealed carry firearms instructor. I think, you know, when we say the next debate, it really hits that at the crux of my feelings. I feel that we're having this so-called debate calls for compromise. It's not a compromise because in the compromise, everybody gets something. What we're really talking about is another concession. And when we start implementing – you know, these laws that aren't going to change the problem, then there's going to be another incident because we didn't address the root cause. Let's look at having a serious conversation about what we're going to do about crime and mental health. Let's look about eliminating these gun-free zones where these people congregate looking for a target-rich environment to create the next massacre so that we won't have that next debate. Let's end it now. Let's get rid of, you know, continually assaulting the Second Amendment. Let's do something that's going to get people the help that they need, whether it's mental health. And for the people that talk about there's too many guns, well, okay, let's have a dialogue and a conversation about firearms education in this country.
All right, Rick Ector, the chair recognizes Senator Kundu from Washington State.
Hi. You know, I'd like to address one point just made about dealing with the mental health issues and dealing with some of these larger issues of crime. That is absurd. How the heck can we address something as overwhelming and huge as that? We have to recognize that incremental steps, as small as they might be, something as simple as dealing with high-capacity magazines and so forth, are steps nonetheless. We need quantifiable steps that we can take to see if they work. We can reverse the ones that don't work, but we need to implement something. We can't keep focusing on these evasive, overwhelming comments like, let's deal with the ills in society. You know how much money that would cost? There's no reality. There's no possible approach to that sort of thing. Something as simple as training. You know, that's got to be one of my biggest concerns. You talk about more training. Well, it's ridiculous. Here in Washington State, we've had police officers, children, they've been killed by guns. So you think that the cops themselves are probably the most trained firearms experts out there. We've had a slate of cases, and think back to the one that just occurred in Tennessee with that little girl who got her father's non-service revolver. So even police officers, with their vast amount of training, they're still having tragedies in their families. So training is not the answer.
All right.
Not alone, at least.
Dr. Gunson?
We need to think about the fact that the guns are there. There are guns all over in society right now. There's no closing the barn door, so to speak. And so now we need to focus on individual homes, individual people, and how they're going to keep their guns safe and out of the hands of people who could harm themselves with them.
And in your view, echoing what Michael Kundu said, that's an incremental step we could take that would get us away from these giant constitutional questions?
That's something that we can do right now. That's something everybody can look at in their own home and be responsible for their own weapons and make sure they don't fall in the hands of somebody like the children that Mr. Kundu was talking about and like people who are mentally ill and may commit suicide.
All right. Rick Ector, would you go along with that? Do we have common ground at least on that issue?
Well, here's the thing. You're skirting the crime problem that we have in this country. There's nothing prohibiting, you know, there functionally from a bad guy from breaking into your house and taking your gun and stealing your gun. And in the case of Mr. Lanza, he shot and killed his mother by blowing her head off. What are we going to do about these gun-free zones? We can't take guns, but we're trusted with them, but we can't take them in certain places despite jumping through all the hoops, dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's. So now we got to leave them in our car. Okay, now we get our car breaking into. Let's get rid of these gun-free zones. And for the individual earlier who said that it costs too much, well, I disagree. I think that if we're serious about doing something about violent crime and predators and mentally ill people who go on these insane, heinous attacks, slaughtering children, I think that we need to address the root cause of the problem instead of incrementally attacking gun rights.
All right. Michael Kundu and Rick Ector, we've got a disagreement between the two of you. You want to mediate it, Dan Baum?
Well, I was going to say I'm with Dr. Gunson. I mean, a lot of what we worry about in this country with guns could be solved by the gun owners themselves if they were a lot more serious about locking up their guns. As one of your guests pointed out, everything that happens bad with a gun in this country happens with a gun that started as a legal purchase. And then that gun owner, that law-abiding gun owner, somehow lost control of the gun. And a child found it, a depressed teenager, a thief, and then something bad happens. We could solve this without government, ourselves, we gun owners, by being a lot more conscientious about how we handle our guns. And I actually wish we would do that, frankly. And both sides would get what they want. We'd have fewer gun deaths. Government would not be telling gun owners how to live. We could do it ourselves, and I wish we would.
Dan Baum is the author of Gun Guys. Rick Echter is a gun owner and a concealed carry instructor in Detroit, Michigan. Michael Kundu is an assault rifle owner who doesn't like the way gun owners have been portrayed and portray themselves. Michael, Rick, and Dan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And let's get some final thoughts from you, Karen Gunson, medical examiner for the state of Oregon.
Well, I just hope that I am very happy that Mr. Baum agrees with me, but I think that we really do need to become more responsible about how we handle those weapons in the home individually. I'm a co-chair of the Child Fatality Review team here in Oregon, and every time we meet, we see a teenager or a small child who has been shot, not because somebody has shot them, but because they've shot themselves.
Karen Gunson, medical examiner for the state of Oregon, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're going to leave you with a couple of voices. First, Tom Diaz, who had an epiphany and changed his mind about gun violence.
To my way of thinking right now, it's at least as likely that the result of this conversation will be that either by default or maybe by direct political action, we'll just say, okay, we are willing to live with whatever the level of gun violence is in America, because we just think that's part of the country.
Is that your experience? Here's one of our listeners.
Hi, John. It's Gwyneth in Eugene, Oregon. My first experience with a gun, and my last, actually, was in Easter Seal camp in Grand Junction, Colorado, when I was 10 years old. I was 4'5" tall, and the rifle was taller than I was. And I had to stand it on the ground in front of me and pull the safety down. And when I shot it, it would knock me over every time. So much for my rifle safety class. Never, ever held a gun again in my life.
Well, you've knocked us over here in Oregon, thanks to Oregon Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to The Takeaway Podcast. Tell us what you think of it by leaving us a review on iTunes or by letting us know on Twitter or Facebook.